We're reading from the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And tonight we have the great honor and pleasure of reading from 13th chapter, beginning with the 8th verse. This you'll find on page number 572. So here, Krishna has listed the elements of knowledge, and he says, besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance, because he's describing the difference between the field and the knower of the field. And in the previous verse, he had described what constitutes the field, including the gross and subtle body. And now, he's giving the process by which one can understand one's existence beyond the field as the knower of the field, and to understand the super knower within all fields. So bhakti, when you say bhakti, it means there's at least two because there's the worshipped and the worshipper in bhakti. And we'll go through the purport a little bit at a time and discuss, because Prabhupada defines each one of the aspects of the process in coming to perfect knowledge. Translation: humility, pridelessness, nonviolence. Tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master. Cleanliness, steadiness, self-control. Renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease. Detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest. Even-mindedness, amid pleasant and unpleasant events. Constant and unalloyed devotion to me. Aspiring to live in a solitary place. Detachment from the general mass of people. Accepting the importance of self-realization and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge. And besides this, whatever there may be, is ignorance. Purport. This process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of the field of activity. But actually, this is the real process of knowledge. If one accepts this process, then the possibility of approaching the absolute truth exists. This is not the interaction of the 24 elements, as described before. This is actually the means to get out of the entanglement of those elements. The embodied soul is entrapped by the body, which is a casing made of the 24 elements. And the process of knowledge, as described here, is the means to get out of it. Of all the descriptions of the process of knowledge, the most important point is described in the first line of the 11th verse. Mayi chananya yogena bhaktir avyabhicharini. The process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. So if one does not approach or is not able to approach the transcendental service of the Lord, then the other 19 items are of no particular value. But if one takes the devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, the other 19 items automatically develop within him. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.12, Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinshana sarver gunais tatra samasate sudaha. All the good qualities of knowledge develop in one who has attained the stage of devotional service. The principle of accepting a spiritual master, as mentioned in the 8th verse, is essential. Even for one who takes to devotional service, it is most important. Transcendental life begins when one accepts a bona fide spiritual master. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, clearly states here that this process of knowledge is the actual path. Anything speculated beyond this is nonsense. The whole thing? Okay. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, clearly states here that this process of knowledge is the actual path. Anything speculated beyond this is nonsense. Questions? Microphones. Banerjee, please pass them over.
So Lord Krishna here is stating that anything beyond what he already stated in this verse is ignorance. But we send our children here to the schools. They don't teach any of the things mentioned here in this list. So
what schools?
The schools, ordinary schools here, like elementary school, then middle school, high school, then college.
Yeah.
So we send our children to those schools, and there they teach some education there.
Yeah.
And according to this verse, that doesn't come under the category of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So then is there any necessity to send children to the school if they're not getting knowledge?
Yes, because
there?
We have two aspects to our life. We have a material body. We have our subtle material body as well, and then there's a spiritual soul. And so we're a mixture of matter and spirit. So we're born into a situation where we have to achieve balance. Balance comes from the word bai lance. Bai means two, and lance means a plate. So if you've probably seen in India, they still use a scale where there's two plates, and you put a weight on one side and a cucumber on the other, and you get to see if you're going to get cheated or not. You can see how things balance out. So we also have two sides to our life. We have a material side and a spiritual side. So it's impractical for people who are born into a conditioned state of existence to all of a sudden renounce everything, or to be expected to suddenly take exclusively to the path of knowledge. And there is some balance required. And therefore, the whole Varnashram system is a system of balance. It's a way in which, although we have material duties to perform, we can get at them quickly. We can understand where I fit in, what my duty is, and I can keep both feet on the ground. If you want to jump up high, you got to have both feet on the ground. You can't be off balance. So on your material side of life, you try to create as small an impact as possible. So one should, as is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, kama sya nendriya pritir labo jivete yavata jivasya tatva jignasya narto yascheha karmabi. Life's desires are not to be aimed at sense gratification. However, one may live for self-preservation so that one can use one's body and mind to inquire about the Supreme Absolute Truth. So kamasya. Kamasya means lust. Kama means just enjoying the material world for the sake of enjoying it, with the prospect that I'm going to stay here. It's not recommended. That's ignorance. Kamasya na indriya priti. Priti means affection. So we shouldn't have affection for the senses, but we do have senses, and they do have their demands. Labo jivita yavata. We should desire a life of self-preservation, of balance, so that we can go on inquiring about the Absolute. And generally, the way it works in a gradual elevation is that as one lives through various stages of life, and at the same time prosecutes this, conducts this process of knowledge along with one's material necessities, then one gradually gains full knowledge about Krishna and detachment from the world. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayara Haitukam. If you have the bhakti to Vasudeva, then you'll get Jnana and Vairagya. Srila Prabhupada stated it clearly when he was coming into the Boston Harbor. He said, everyone's in ignorance. How am I going to assist them? He said, by hearing the Bhagavat, gradually they'll come out of the ignorance that they're in, and they'll come to the state of real knowledge. Does that help? Okay. Any other question or comment so far about the first paragraph. Did you like it? Feeling happy? Yeah? Yes. You may ask a question. Now's the time.
Prabhuji, to connecting to or finding to the as bona fide spiritual master,
mm-hmm.
What is the process? The reason I'm asking this, I was talking to one of my friend in Berkeley. He is not part of the Hare Krishna movement, but he started studying the Bhagavad Gita, and he going to the website and to doing some kind of things. And I told him that, you know, in this point you should find some guru and follow. And he said, you know, some of his advice from the temple and some other people told him that when he needed a guru, either guru will find him or he will find guru. And he's still going for that kind of things. I mean, according to this word, this is nonsense. Maybe he's doing that. But how do we...
So what's your question?
How do we find guru? Even from our organization, different people, I ask them, are you planning to renounce life? And they said, well, they are looking for a guru. It seems like they are shopping, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the process of...
Process is to be sincere and to become a sincere seeker and disciple. It's harder to find a disciple than it is to find a guru, actually. So where's all the gurus? Where's all the disciples? Where is there someone who's actually serious, who really wants to do? Dhruva Maharaj showed an example. He was very determined. He went to his mother, and he was crying. Why was he crying? Because he wanted something. He needed money. He wanted a kingdom bigger than his great-grandfather, bigger than Brahma. He wanted something bigger than the universe that Brahma had created. And he heard that you could find that, you can get that through the Lord. So he went off on his own, and he was intercepted by a guru. Narada Muni stopped him and said, "Where are you going? Hold on, you're just a little boy. Why don't you go back and patch things up? Why don't you be equipoised to all living entities?" He gave him some good instruction. And Dhruva Maharaj said, "I'm a Kshatriya. You've given me Brahminical instruction, and I really appreciate it, but I can't follow it." He said, I'm going to get what I want. I got to find God." So he went off like that. And then Narada stopped him again and said, I was only testing you." And he could see his resolve, so he gave him instruction. Case in point, if you want a guru like Narada Muni, you should have the determination of Dhruva Maharaj, that kind of desire within your heart. If, Krishna is within the heart of every living being. He's the guru, actually. He's the Adi Guru. Ishvara sarvabhutanam hridaya sharajuna tishtati brahmayan sarvabhutani yantra rujani maya. He's there all the time. He's directing our wanderings wherever we go throughout the material world. And he's waiting for us to turn our attention toward him. Gajendra said this in his prayers to the Lord when he was caught by the crocodile. He's an example. Dhruva Maharaj was an example of someone who was in need of money or wealth and who sought God. Another person who is an example of someone who attained perfection because he was in distress is Gajendra. And Gajendra prayed to the Lord when he was caught by the crocodile that, "My Lord, you're never inattentive. You're always there within the heart, and you're never lazy," he said. "You're always watching to see when I'll turn my attention toward you." And as soon as we turn our attention towards him, then he makes all kinds of arrangements. He's making arrangements for everybody, but somebody who specifically wants to approach him, sincerely prays in that way, he gives that opportunity. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jignasu shreya uttamam Shabde paricha nishnatam brahman upashramashrayam. So the Upanishads say, therefore, one must have a guru. What does that mean exactly? You could look at it two ways. You could say, well, you won't make any advancement without a guru. Or you could say, if you want a guru, you must have a guru. That should be your feeling. I must have a guru. I have to have somebody to lead me, to teach me. And when one is in distress or one is very determined or is in knowledge, then Krishna helps from within the heart. This is confirmed by Uddhava. He said this to Lord Krishna when he met with him. He told him, Naivo payantya pachitim kavayastavesha brahmayu shapi kritam rida muda smaranta yontar bahish tanubitam ashubhan vadunban acharya chaitiva pusha swagatim vyanakti. He said that if I had the lifetime of Lord Brahma and his powers, I would not be able to express my gratitude towards you. Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur both comment on this and say that the devotee feels so grateful to Krishna for his guidance that they could not repay him even after 10,000 millenniums had gone by, amount of time. And then he says, the reason I'm so grateful is you've appeared, you're within my heart as the Chaitya Guru, and also externally you appear as the instructing spiritual master. From within and from without, you're giving me direction, how to come to you. How to find a guru. First, know what a guru is. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jignasu shreya uttamam. Shabde pari chanishnatam. The Upanishad says, what is a guru? Guru is someone who has taken a dip in the ocean of transcendental knowledge. And also, that they've served their spiritual master. The specific metaphor is that a person who's carried wood for the spiritual master. When one lives at the Gurukul, there are chores to do. In other words, it's not just an academic exercise, because there's a blessing that comes down from one generation to the next, from spiritual master to disciple. And if someone has carried wood for their spiritual master, for instance, done menial labor, menial service, this means. I always like to think of the books. Srila Prabhupada's books are made out of wood. You carry those around for a few decades, you know, and you get some blessings. The person who's steeped in transcendental knowledge and also has served their spiritual master faithfully, this is also mentioned in Shastra, is somebody who's a bona fide spiritual master. Then so if you're going to go buy a diamond in San Francisco, there are lots of people who will cheat you or give you something that's not quite right. So you want to study up before you go buy a diamond. When you buy a diamond, there's at least 7 aspects you need to look at. You know, it has to do with clarity, has to do with weight, has to do with cut, has to do with carat. And you look at all these things carefully. If you know, if you study a little pamphlet on it ahead of time, at least you'll know there's something to look for. If you're hungry, you'll search out food somewhere. Look at Arjuna, the example of Arjuna when he was friends with Krishna, and then in the beginning of the battle, just before the battle started, he realized what he was up against, killing his own family members. He was in despair. And at that time, Karpanya Dosho Bahata Sabhava Prichchami Tam, he surrendered everything. He felt, I can no longer direct myself. Please help me. You know, this is the mood of somebody searching for for guidance. So I want to know you. Please show me the way. I'll read you something from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. If you've studied this first chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's quite a bit of information about the spiritual master. the spiritual masters. This chapter is plural. So there are at least three kinds of spiritual masters. One's mentioned in this chapter called the Vartmana Pradakshaka Guru. That is somebody who originally shows you the path. And then there are instructing spiritual masters, those who give us instructions. And then there's a Diksha Guru, somebody gives you the mantra. The Diksha Guru is somebody who gives you the mantra, so you can chant the mantra. And you must receive that through the disciplic succession. So you may have many Shiksha Gurus. You have one Diksha Guru. Don't need more than one Diksha Guru. You take the mantra from the Guru. We just heard on the way down how Lord Chaitanya, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he accepted a spiritual master, Diksha Guru, Srila Ishvara Puri. He went to Gaya to do some ceremonies for his departed father. And Hare Krishna. And while he was there, he met Srila Ishvara Puri, that venerable Vaishnav. And took initiation from him. Just after that, he changed from being a very haughty scholar into a God-intoxicated person. Anyway, Krishna himself shows the example. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rama Rama Hare Hare. Okay, from text 34. Vande Gurun Isha Bhaktan Isha Misha Vatarakan Tat Prakashams Tachach Chaktihi Krishna Chaitanya Samjakam. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the spiritual masters, the devotees of the Lord's incarnations, his plenary portions, his energies, and the primeval Lord himself, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Purport. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has compiled this Sanskrit verse for the beginning of his book, and now he will explain it in detail. He offers his respectful obeisances to the six principles of the Absolute Truth. Gurun is plural in number because anyone who gives spiritual instructions based on the revealed scriptures is accepted as a spiritual master. Although others give help in showing the way to beginners, the guru who first initiates one with the Maha Mantra is to be known as the initiator, and the saints who give instructions for progressive advancement in Krishna consciousness are called instructing spiritual masters. The initiating and instructing spiritual masters are equal and identical manifestations of Krishna, although they have different dealings. Their function is to guide the conditioned souls back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami accepted Nityananda Prabhu and the six Goswamis in the category of Guru. Isha Bhaktan refers to the devotees of the Lord, like Sri Srivas and all other such followers, who are the energy of the Lord and who are qualitatively non-different from him. Isha Bhaktan refers to acharyas like Advaita Prabhu, who is an avatar of the Lord. Tat Prakashan indicates the direct manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nityananda Prabhu, and the initiating spiritual master. Tat Shakti refers to the spiritual master, the Shaktis of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Gadadhar, Damodara, and Jagadananda belong to this category of the internal energy. The six principles are differently manifested, but all equally worshipable. Krishnadas Kaviraj begins by offering his obeisances unto them to teach us the method of worshipping Lord Chaitanya, the external potency of Godhead. Called Maya, can never associate with the Lord, just as darkness cannot remain in the presence of light. Yet darkness, being but an illusory and temporary covering of light, has no existence independent of light. Text 35. Mantra Guru ar jata shiksha guru gan tanhar charana age koriya vandan. I first offer my respectful obeisances at the lotus feet of my initiating spiritual master and all my instructing spiritual masters. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami, in his thesis, Bhakti Sandarbha, has stated that uncontaminated devotional service is the objective of pure Vaishnavas, and that one has to execute such service in the association of other devotees. By associating with devotees of Lord Krishna, one develops a sense of Krishna consciousness and thus becomes inclined toward the loving service of the Lord. This is the process of approaching the Supreme Lord by gradual appreciation in devotional service. If one desires unalloyed devotional service, one must associate with devotees of Sri Krishna, for by such association only can a conditioned soul achieve a taste for transcendental love and thus revive his eternal relationship with Godhead in a specific manifestation and in terms of the specific transcendental mellow, rasa, that one has eternally inherent in him. If one develops love for Krishna by Krishna-conscious activities, one can know the Supreme Absolute Truth, but he who tries to understand God simply by logical arguments will not succeed, nor will he get a taste for unalloyed devotion. The secret is that one must submissively listen to those who know perfectly the science of God, and one must begin the mood of service regulated by the preceptor. A devotee already attracted by the name, form, qualities, etc. of the Supreme Lord may be directed to his specific manner of devotional service. He need not waste time in approaching the Lord through logic. The expert spiritual master knows well how to engage his disciple's energy in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, and thus he engages a devotee in a specific devotional service according to his special tendency. A devotee must have only one initiating spiritual master, because in the scriptures acceptance of more than one is always forbidden. There is no limit, however, to the number of instructing spiritual masters one may accept. There's room in the front row. There is no limit, however, to the number of instructing spiritual masters one may accept. Generally, a spiritual master who constantly instructs a disciple in spiritual science becomes his initiating spiritual master later on. So, up till in this purport, we can understand that, as Rupa Goswami describes, the process of approaching Krishna is, Rupa Goswami gives, and also Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, it's a process of thickening faith. And in the beginning, adau, shraddha, there's faith. Faith means that there's a sentiment within the heart for devotees and devotional service. Not everybody has it. Some people have it. It's a great wealth. It's obtained by agyata sukriti, by obtaining some kind of, through some kind of unknown association and service to devotees, to Krishna, in circumstances which, we may not even remember. People do things all the time like that. This grows within the heart. It's a favor bestowed upon us. So adau shraddha, then that faith awakens within the heart when there's a sufficient amount of shraddha. Shraddha really means, shraddha means heart, and dha means where you place. So the heart is the charioteer, and the body's the chariot. Whatever's in our heart, that's where we're going to go. It's going to draw us in a certain direction. Shraddha means where you place your heart. You vote with your feet. You're here, right? You're sitting in a class, in Bhagavad Gita class. It's a Wednesday night. It's dark outside. You could have stayed in Gilroy. But you didn't. You voted with your feet. You're here. That's Shraddha. So in the beginning, there's this impetus within the heart. And one sees devotees, one sees devotional service, maybe even see a devotional painting and think, that's good, I like that. I want to be like that. Not everyone has that. That's Shraddha. Ado Shraddha. Tata Soda Sangha. What does that lead to? The most natural thing in the world that one wants to associate with devotees. When one has Shraddha. Next thing is, where are they? I want to know where they are. Where's the phone number? How do I get in touch? And you start looking and find, I want to see where these people are. So that's the next step. Ado Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha. You want to have Sangha. You want to have connection with these sadhus, people who are already engaged sincerely in the process of devotional service, right? Tata Sadhu Sangha sounds pretty accurate so far, right? When one associates with sadhus, then you come to Bhajana Kriya. As Prabhupada mentions here, that if one desires unalloyed devotional service, you must associate with devotees of Sri Krishna. By such association only, one can a conditioned soul achieve a taste for transcendental loving service and thus revive his eternal relationship with Godhead. And then submissively, one must listen to those who have perfect knowledge of the science of God and must begin the mode of service regulated by the preceptor. So regulated by the preceptor means next step is Bhajana Kriya. When one comes into the association of devotees, then one who's very serious wants to take the process in its entirety. Say, okay, I'm following the process. I'm going to officially enter into the process. Bhajana Kriya means initiation. Now you accept a spiritual master who will guide you. Spiritual master means that it's the localized mercy of Krishna just for you, customized. It's like a big telescope. Sometimes they have, if you go up to the, I don't know, do we have any telescopes around San Francisco? Big ones. In L.A., there's one up on the hill you can go and look at. It's gigantic. I mean, the lens is as big as the altar. And then the part you look through is about this big. Just fits your eye. Someone might look at that and say, I want to look through the big end. You look through the big end, you won't see anything. So there's Krishna. He's unlimited. But he sends his representatives in a certain localized way. You look through the small end and you'll see everything. So spiritual masters like that. We should feel when we hear our spiritual master or spiritual masters, you know, speaking, that it's confirming what you already were hearing inside. Right? So when you first read Bhagavad Gita and you're hungry for spiritual knowledge and read Bhagavad Gita, you can't put it down. And you say, you don't care. You'll stay up all night. You got to work tomorrow. I don't care. I'm going to read this all night. Because you found that voice that's always been inside you. That's Krishna speaking. He's the spiritual master. He's telling everything in Bhagavad Gita. It's so perfect. That's why people read it over and over again. You hear it and you say, yes, that's confirming. And when you hear a person who's in tune with Bhagavad Gita, it's a spiritual master. And that when that person speaks, then you feel that confirming voice also. Yes, confirming, bringing me to the next, it's confirming. It's something I know, I'm feeling, yes, this is the correct thing. Spiritual master speaks only on the basis of Shastra. The spiritual master is a representative of Krishna. Krishna is the spiritual master. Those who represent Krishna are spiritual masters, representative spiritual masters of Krishna. He's the Adi Guru. So then Bhajana Kriya means then you decide, okay, I'm taking a vow. I'm going to do this. I'm going to make a success of my life. You have faith in the Shastra. You have faith Bhagavad Gita is real. It's true. And the other books, the Nectar of Devotion, and you say, now I'm going to enter the authorized process because I have faith in the Shastra. And therefore you approach a spiritual master who's also, as I said, served a spiritual master, who's speaking on behalf of Krishna, speaking Shastra, and the person has no other business. This is what Shastra also says. The person has no other business. That is their business, is Krishna. Krishna consciousness. There's no other desire in their heart and no other occupation. That's what they do. So then bhajana kriya means you take direction, you begin the process of devotional service. Initiation is you receive the name. There's a process for initiation, actually, that you go through. Getting ready for initiation is all part of the process. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes this as pancha samskar. There's tapa, which means some tapasya, and means that you become aware, very much aware, that the material world is not your home. And you also, you begin to turn away from the material world, that there's no prospect for me here. And pundra is the next stage, which means that then you begin to exhibit yourself outwardly as a Vaishnav. It really literally means to wear urvapundra, you wear tilak, and you're showing out externally, you're showing as a Vaishnav. And there's also, you know, the tulsi mala. In South India, they give you a brand on your skin, actually. We don't do that. a brand of a chakra. After that comes mantra. Nam. And so Nam is a specific thing. Prabhupada's mentioning here, this is initiation when you go to a devotee and you receive the name. Because Vaishnavism means taking shelter of a Vaishnav. We don't go it alone. We don't say, I don't need anybody. It's like a ship without a rudder, as Prabhupada will say later in the purport here. So you take that from a spiritual master, the name, and also you receive a name, which means that I'm the servant of a Vaishnav. Someone's asked you, you know, who are you with? You want to say, this is who I'm working under. This is my line. When Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would travel around sometimes preaching, he'd get out, people say, come meet my spiritual teacher, everything, and say, what's his line? Where does he come from? Oh, no, he doesn't have a line. He's just, you know, self-effulgent. He'd get on the train and go. You come in a line from Krishna. So bhajana kriya means now you've entered seriously. You've entered the class. Difference between having a girlfriend and getting married. You get married, it's serious. Right? Okay. So bhajana kriya, yes. Okay.
Now, different people take initiation into different sampradayas. Like there's Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, there's Brahma Madhva Gaura Vaishnava Sampradaya, and there's Rudra Sampradaya. The initiation into a particular line, does it mean that they have a particular relationship with Krishna? Like, for example, like all the Gaura Vaishnavas have a relationship with Krishna in Goloka. And maybe all the Sri Vaishnavas have a relationship with Narayana form. Is that right?
Not necessarily. You can't stereotype it like that, exactly. Murari Gupta was in the line of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu directly, but he was a great Ram Bhakta. And brother of Rupan Sanatan Goswami, also Ram Bhakta. Thing is, when one approaches Lord Chaitanya and chants the Hare Krishna Mahamantra has everything in it. Krishna has everything. So whatever one's particular rasa, as Prabhupada was mentioning here, one's relationship is with Krishna. If you chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra and you take shelter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that will come to full fruition. And, you know, these different sampradayas, these are the four bona fide sampradayas. Why? Because they're coming down from Krishna through different agencies. It's kind of like, and they all have the same interest, Vishnu. They're all Vaishnavas. Same thing. Kind of like, you know, in America there's Democrats and Republicans. Two different parties. They may not see eye to eye on many things, but their interest is the same. The country. So, you know, these different sampradayas are like that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And bhajana kriya, when one enters into Bhajana Kriya, then the process of Anartha Nivritti begins. It means the actual cleansing of the heart, in which there's toil and struggle and the continuance of you go on as you're becoming clean until you come to the point of nishtha, which means a steadiness in devotional service, where you're no longer disturbed by any of the anarthas or unwanted desires within the heart that push us, which are counter to our actual interests, and which are compared to like dust on the mirror of the heart. That all becomes cleansed by this process, entering into the process. And then there are more advanced stages of devotional service as one continues, and this is called the thickening of faith. After nama becomes mantra, one receives the mantra, which means the mantras for deity worship. They're pancharatrik mantras, secret mantras, which are taken only from a spiritual master, and then one engages in deity worship. This is called panchasamskar. Okay? And I'll just finish the purport. The last lines were, there's no limit, however, to the number of instructing spiritual masters one may accept. Generally, a spiritual master who constantly instructs a disciple in spiritual science becomes his initiating spiritual master later on. What was the last line? The idea of it. What was that? Okay, I'll read it again. Generally, a spiritual master who constantly instructs a disciple in spiritual science becomes his initiating spiritual master later on. You asked, how do you find a spiritual master, right? Does this help to answer your question? So what was the last sentence?
The last sentence was, the one who is constantly engaged to instructing,
become the initiating spiritual master later on, right? One should always remember. What should we always remember? You ready to hear what we should always remember? That a person who is reluctant to accept a spiritual master or be initiated is sure to be baffled in his endeavor to go back to Godhead. What does baffled mean? Okay, somebody look it up. Can we have the dictionary, please? Quick, try to do it within 22 seconds. Fast as you can. Reluctant. This is a very important word, isn't it? One should always remember that a person who is reluctant, look that up while you're at it, reluctant to accept a spiritual master and be initiated is sure to be baffled in his endeavor to go back to Godhead. We had a question about how to find a spiritual master. Baffled is to frustrate or?
Frustrate or check a person, check as by confusing or perplexing to impede the force or monologue.
Okay, to enforce the. And now, reluctant. RELUCTANT. Let's see which wins, the paper or the electronic.
What is that verse number?
35. 135. Adi 135.
Unwilling
or disinclined. So we have a will, right? Sometimes if you say, are you able and willing? You know, I had a person take great offense, great umbrage once when I said able and willing, just because of the word willing. What do you mean I'm not willing? So we have a will, execute the will. So if someone is reluctant, one should always remember that a person who is reluctant to accept a spiritual master and be initiated is sure to be baffled in his endeavor to go back to Godhead. One who is not properly initiated may present himself as a great devotee, but in fact he is sure to encounter many stumbling blocks on his path of progress towards spiritual realization, with the result that he must continue his term of material existence without relief. Such a helpless person is compared to a ship without a rudder, for such a ship can never reach its destination. It is imperative, therefore, that one accept a spiritual master if he at all desires to gain the favor of the Lord. That's a very important sentence. It's imperative, therefore, that one should accept a spiritual master if he at all desires to gain the favor of the Lord, because it's the Lord's system, and that's how he distributes his mercy. No more talking. It's parampara. It's Krishna's system. There is a system, and that's how he does it. If someone asks you for water and you bring a milk, or half and half, or Pepsi Cola, is it service? Is it pleasing? No. So there is a system. There's a process, actually. And by following the process, as it's pleasing to Krishna. That's how he distributes himself. That's how he gives his mercy. So we follow the process. The service of the spiritual master is essential. If there is no chance to serve the spiritual master directly, a devotee should serve him by remembering his instructions. There is no difference between the spiritual master's instructions and the spiritual master himself. In his absence, therefore, his words of direction should be the pride of the disciple. If one thinks he is above consulting anyone else, including a spiritual master, he is at once an offender at the lotus feet of the Lord. Such an offender can never go back to Godhead. It is imperative that a serious person accept a bona fide spiritual master in terms of shastric injunctions. Shri Jiva Goswami advises that one not accept a spiritual master in terms of hereditary or customary social and ecclesiastical conventions. Ecclesiastical means in relationship to the church. So one should simply try to find a genuinely qualified spiritual master for actual advancement in spiritual understanding. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave this definition. He said, what's a spiritual master? Somebody who knows the science of Krishna. He said, it doesn't matter where they come from. Kiba bipra, kiba nyasi, shudra kena noi, could be a shudra, could be a Brahmin or a sannyasi. That's inconsequential. Ye Krishna tattva beta, someone who knows the science of Krishna, she guru hoy, he's a guru. So you start putting the picture together, what you're looking for, what the qualification of a person, but as I said in the opening sentences to the answer of your question, best thing is to discover what a disciple is. Disciples are much rarer than spiritual masters. And the secret of the whole thing is that a spiritual master is a good disciple. Find out what a good disciple is. Find out what a good disciple does. Become one. And look, then you'll see. You see the world not the way it is, but the way you are. So if you develop this intense desire to become a disciple, then you'll see, oh, I see what a spiritual master is. Spiritual master is a servant. Servant is a good disciple, staunch disciple. Okay? Something. It's a big discussion, but it's always fun. We came to that because we're in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and within this chapter, starting with the 8th verse, Krishna gives 20 different aspects of what is the process of knowledge, and one of those is accepting a bona fide spiritual master. And Sunny had inquired about how one gets one of those. Hare Krishna. So we're continuing on the Bhagavad Gita. We're so fortunate. We're sitting here together reading the Bhagavad Gita. Isn't it? I'm so happy to be here. Okay, so 574. We're in the middle of the page, and we're continuing. As for the knowledge outlined here, the items may be analyzed as follows. Humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. The material conception of life makes us very eager to receive honor from others. But from the point of view of a man of imperfect knowledge, who knows that he is not this body, anything, honor or dishonor, pertaining to this body is useless. What's useless? Why? Because you're not your body? Okay. One should not be hankering after this material deception. People are very anxious to be famous for their religion, and consequently, sometimes it is found that without understanding the principles of religion, one enters into some group which is not actually following religious principles, and then wants to advertise himself as a religious mentor. As for actual advancement in spiritual science, one should have a test to see how far he is progressing. He can judge by these items. Okay, so this first item, actually it's the first item on the list when Krishna talks about knowledge. He says, amanidvam. Humility is not desiring to have honor from others. So much so, Raghunath Das Goswami, when he wrote in his Manakshiksha, that this desire to have honor from others, it's called pratishta, is he compared to the stool of a hog. Now, I've seen some hogs recently in Vrindavan, and they eat stool. They eat stool of other animals, believe it or not. And when they pass stool, what is that? The stool that comes from a hog. And that's what Raghunath Das Goswami compares the desire for honor from others, Hare Krishna, is that it's the most abominable thing. So this is a test. And humility, let's talk more about humility. Why is it a process of knowledge? Who would have thought humility is a process of knowledge? Yes. Microphones flying across the room. Please.
Because without humility, one cannot gain knowledge.
Why?
Because he will have own opinion. His own opinion
okay.
about things.
So, Mahatma Prabhu, when he was here, he gave a seminar, our first Bhakti Life seminar. And he told us that there are three words that block all knowledge. Three words that block all your knowledge. You remove these three words, and your knowledge will come flowing in. You know what the three words are? What? Me, 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 no. What is it? Three words. I know that. Do you ever think that when somebody's telling you something? Oh, I already know that. I know that. I knew a teenager once. Always saying, yeah, I already know that. I know that. I knew that. I know that. I already know that. How do you know that? You're a teenager. You don't know anything. But if I already know everything, then there's no room for it to come in. But humility, please come up front. Come close. Humility, and if you like, there's Giran Zafu. So you can be comfortable here. Thank you, please. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Humility opens the door to knowledge. If I already know everything, I'm already full. I already know that. I already know what you're going to say before you say it even. Then I block the possibility of hearing any nuance or understanding anything. Humility. It's in the material world, it can be compared to, it's almost a negative thing. In a way. In fact, when we brought this up in this class previously and at the Sunday program, sometimes people have said, yeah, but if you're too humble, people take advantage of you. Humility is like having a negative charge. And I'll compare Krishna to the biggest magnet in existence, positive magnet. And actually, that's what Krishna means, the attractor. It means he attracts everything and everyone. So imagine Krishna to be like the most powerful positive magnet. And if you put a positive magnet next to another positive magnet, then they repel each other. And I remember as kids getting two magnets and thinking, why don't they stick? Obviously, I wasn't meant to be a physicist. But, you know, why won't they stick? Finally, somebody told me that they're charged in the same way. They're both positive. They're coming off each other like that. But if you take a positive magnet and a negative magnet, boom, they come together very quickly. What to speak of a gigantic, all-powerful positive magnet and a tiny little negative magnet, it'll be pulled from a long distance away and attracted. Opposite, change the charge, it'll be thrown far away. So Krishna is the source of all knowledge. And if we are humble, if we're you have this quality of namaha, means not me. That's what we say, namaha, namo. It's not me, it's you. My head's down. In fact, we bow our head to the floor. You know, it's a way of submitting ourselves. And in that way, knowledge can pour in, and we can be attracted to Krishna. Sunny.
To the humility, I remember I read this somewhere a long time ago, that about the Upanishad. The knowledge is like a water, and if you are not humble and if you are not down, the water doesn't run up. It always runs down. When you are sitting with the Guru, with a humble nature, then the knowledge will come to you. The very much of that word Upanishad is also mentioning that. Upanishad is also you are sitting down.
Yeah. Sitting down, sitting close, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he met Prakashananda Saraswati, who asked him, why aren't you studying Vedanta? Why aren't you a big scholar like us? He said, my spiritual master considered me a fool, murka. And I take it that I'm a fool. He said, you're a fool. You can't understand Vedanta. Take this Maha Mantra. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was playing the part of a devotee. When he was just a young boy, he was the greatest scholar in all the world. Everyone who came there, including the great Digvijaya Pandit, was soundly defeated. But when he took to his lila of being a great lover of God after his initial scholarly lila, he exhibited this. And after he met his spiritual master, in fact, the disciple is always defeated by the spiritual master. Now, nobody ever defeated Nimai Pandit until he met his spiritual master. And his spiritual master had written a book, actually. Ishvara Puri had written a book, a Vaishnava book. And it was, he said to Nimai Pandit, he said, you're a great scholar. You're known as a great scholar of grammar and logic. He said, would you look over this book? You take a look at it and tell me if there's anything missing, anything. And Nimai Pandit said, when a Vaishnava writes about Krishna, there can be nothing amiss. Even if the grammar is not, you know, completely this way or that way, it's still considered to be perfect, because you know, the conclusion is surrender to Krishna. He said, but no, please look. So he looked, and he looked through the book, he found one statement about Atma Nipodi, and Nimai Pandit brought back the book to Ishvara Puri and said, yeah, everything's fine. I found this one phrase. Atna Nipodi, it should be something else. It's a different thing. There's a mistake in the grammar here. So Srila Ishvara Puri, he stayed all night and he looked and he went through all the Shastra, all the Sanskrit dictionaries, and he looked over and over again at this phrase. And then he came back to Nimai Pandit next day. He said, I think Atmanipodi is correct, actually. I think that you did not understand it correctly, because actually it is the right phrase. And Nimai Pandit, see, Ishvara Puri was his future spiritual master. He became very pleased, and he accepted defeat. And there, Vrindavan Das Thakur says, the disciple always takes defeat before the spiritual master and becomes like a murkha, fool. Not that you act like a fool. You should be ready to do things correctly, and you should study how to do service properly. And it pours down. There's mercy that pours down from one generation to the next. We can't, you know, that this is how it goes. You know, it pours down. And if one is below and ready to take in that mercy, he can absorb so much. And it doesn't mean the spiritual master necessarily has to be a big scholar either. In our line, we have Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who was the spiritual master of the great Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Gaur Kishore Das Babaji didn't have many disciples, but you don't need many if you have Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. In fact, the spiritual master is hoping for one moon, one person who can illuminate the whole world, not many, many stars. One person who's actually very, very serious about spiritual life and Krishna consciousness becomes a pure devotee. And Ishvara Puri told that to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. After he had taken initiation, he went away. He became bewildered by the mantra. And he came back to his spiritual master and said, excuse me, but what kind of mantra did you give me? It's driven me crazy. I laugh, I cry, I fall on the ground when I chant this mantra. And the spiritual master was very pleased. And Srila Prabhupada says there, the spiritual master is pleased when he sees the disciple become advanced in spiritual life. I remember the first time that I had the overwhelming honor to meet Srila Prabhupada personally in San Francisco. And I was brought into the room with a few other devotees. We were Sankirtan devotees. We were doing book distribution and introduced to Prabhupada. And Bhaktidas was our temple president. He was saying what our book scores were. They're doing this, they're doing that, they're doing this, that. And Prabhupada looked at us and he said, you must also read the books. And he went on for half an hour telling that these books are not just for selling. They're actually, he said, I've written these books for you to become pure devotees and go back home, back to Godhead in this lifetime. That's what the whole process is. Spiritual master becomes pleased by that. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu always presented himself as murkha before his spiritual master. Became very pleased by it. This is part of humility. And there's an etiquette that goes on, too, when one is, in a spiritual master-disciple relationship. There's not, when there is that connection, officially, of course, you see on the battlefield of Kurukshetra when Arjuna accepted him as a spiritual master, friendly talks stopped. And now he, was no more friend. They were friends. They were friends. They used to sit around together, even cut jokes at each other's expense and so many other things. But that all stopped. It was serious after that. And, there's an etiquette and there's a proper way. In fact, Nectar Devotion says that one sees a spiritual master, he should bow down. This is, it's part of the etiquette. So these are, this is part of the culture. In any culture of learning, actually, this is there. You go to a university and there used to be some respect for the professor. I was kind of surprised. I went back to school for a while and I was used to, the ashram life and great respect for the teacher. And I remember being appalled at how people would challenge the professor in sort of irreverent way and things like that. And really surprised me. Hare Krishna. Yes. Partha Sarthi Prabhu. Everyone please move forward by 7 inches.
So we're discussing humility. Gopal Kumar in Briya Bhagavatamrita states that real humility is realizing that every living entity is more advanced than you are. And in such a way, one can actually move past the stage and realize what their anarthas are. Because once we're humble, we're off the platform that we're perfect and that there's nothing wrong with us and there's everything wrong with everyone else. Mm. That we're perfect and everyone else is just broke. And so humility in the guru-disciple relationship, tadvidhiti pranipatena, and one has to humbly and submissively serve in a way so that one pushes the praise away from them so that they can realize, okay, I have this fault, I have this fault. So actually, humility is such a key to moving past anartha nivritti, to identifying the anarthas in the heart before we can even move forward in anartha nivritti. First, we have to identify. So it's actually, it's a very key position, key phrase in our dictionary for how to advance in the devotional process.
Really nice point. Very nice. And furthermore, in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, this humility is called dainya. And dainya means extreme humility. And Sanatana Goswami says that it always accompanies advancement in devotional service. In fact, as one advances, the two are practically synonymous. In wherever you see advanced devotion, dainya or humility will always accompany that advancement in devotional service. As one approaches the Supreme Lord and realizes his inexhaustible glories, he feels himself more and more insignificant as well. Humility, yes. Everyone can move just a little bit more forward, like this time go for 8.5 inches.
So when we hear humility, of course, surrender comes to mind about how we surrender to the spiritual master. But as we see in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Raghunath Das Goswami, first he tries to surrender to Lord Chaitanya, and then Lord Chaitanya tells him to leave and then come back when he's ready. And at that time, it'll be true surrender. So maybe what's the difference between, because we see in the early days of the movement, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s even, how everybody was just surrendered to the mission, but then slowly, they kind of burnt out. So what's the difference between immature surrender and mature surrender? As we see Raghunath Das Goswami, when he maturely surrendered, he never left that life of living at the banks of Radhakund and just diving deep into bhajan. So what's
the first
difference?
Of all, let's look at the premise of what you said. In the 60s, 70s, and 80s, people took to the, and then they burned out. So they's a pretty catch-all phrase. And burned out is also, you have to talk about what burned out means. So anyway, no, it's rhetorical. You don't have to, actually. I'm just saying that it's important to, when you know, when you make a statement like that, to let's talk about what it means. So what it does mean is that surrender is a process. It's a process. And it's not necessarily a one-time event. And it's continual also. So, for instance, Sharanagati, which is the path of surrender, means that there are steps to follow in the process of surrender, and there are aspects of surrender. So, to your question, many people take to Krishna consciousness who are not ripe; they're not ready for it yet. That's okay. Tyakvasu dharmam charanam bhujam harer bhajana pakvota patet tato yadi yatra kva babajam abuda mushakim kovarta apto bhajatam sudharmata. Narada Muni says in his prayers, his instructions to Vyasadev, that someone may give up everything and join the Krishna consciousness movement. Tyakvasu dharmam. In other words, they have some dharma. They were going to be, a lawyer. And they call their mom and dad and say, guess what? I joined the Hare Krishna movement. Tekva Siddharmam. You quit Cambridge to join the Hare Krishna movement, eh? He gave up his dharma. Charanam bhujam harer bhajana pakvo, but he's apakva, which means not ripe. That person, Narada Muni says, because he took to Krishna consciousness for that time, better off than someone who completely fulfilled their dharma, went through their career and became expert at it, but never took to the path of devotion. So, I'm giving this as a preface that, you know, those who became excited about, in this, as you said, 60s, 70s, and 80s, about the Krishna consciousness movement and jumped right in, got great benefit, even if they didn't stay right in. That's shastric. There was an atmosphere at that time also when people were jumping into a lot of things. In fact, there was a mantra, turn on, tune in, drop out. That was propagated by Timothy Leary, who was started off as a professor at Harvard, and then he experimented with LSD. Did you know him, Rakshit? My father knew him. He was a psychologist, and that was his thing, and it caught hold. It went all over it went everywhere, this mantra, turn on, which meant, you know, take drugs, especially psychedelics, which started off as being legal. Tune in, I guess, to your inner vibration or whatever, and drop out. It was trying to get people to drop out of college also. And a lot of people did. It was a time of experimentation, and there were lots of people who were open to all kinds of new things. Sort of a wave of a romantic movement of, like, explore your inner self. Even you can look at the music from that time. Not the 80s so much, but early 60s and 70s. There was a case to be made that there was that kind of atmosphere. Prabhupada arrived at that time, and many, many people took to Krishna consciousness. And many people didn't give up Krishna consciousness either, and they didn't burn out. In fact, sometimes when people would go away from the process of Krishna consciousness, devotees, incredulous, would go to Prabhupada and say, you know, why are big devotees going away? Because to us, somebody who had been in the movement for 2 years longer than we had was a big devotee. And Prabhupada said, big devotees don't go away. They stay. And many people stay. Take the process of Krishna consciousness. So your other point was, you know, how does one get ready for the process of, or to surrender? Well, if someone is immature and they, for instance, just as an example, takes to Krishna consciousness and then goes away trying to enjoy the material world, to re-enjoy what they'd already given up, then oftentimes Krishna is very merciful. And first of all, the person can't see the world the way they did before. There's a pea under the mattress. You know, the princess and the pea? They put a pea under her mattress to test her, and then he put about 10 mattresses. She couldn't sleep because she was uncomfortable. So a devotee, having seen what he or she sees through the eyes of knowledge and Krishna consciousness, can't get comfortable again in the material world. And that also, Narada says in his instructions to Vyasadeva, that even if a person rejects the process after taking it and goes away, they don't experience the material life the way others did. They always remember the taste they had in Krishna consciousness and try to come back to it. So there's a great mercy process in getting beat up again in the material world and then coming on one's own terms back to Krishna consciousness. There's an interesting paradigm which I think relates to this phenomenon that the author Stephen Covey gives in one of his books, where he talks about dependence, independence, and interdependence. Interdependence is a mature situation where one is actually open to cooperation and surrender on one's own terms. In other words, there's no condition. Dependence is an out-of-balance situation. You're dependent on somebody else, and you go along because you have to. And sometimes I've seen this in Krishna consciousness movement, where people come out of a kind of exhilaration and expectation, and then they go along for some time, and then all of a sudden they realize, there's a big world out there, I didn't really look at it yet, and, but they're dependent, so then they break away. They break away from their, association, where they had become dependent, and then they become independent. And in that independence, they realize many things, that the world's a difficult place, and they ruminate on the actual philosophy of Krishna consciousness while they're in that mix of the material world. And then maturity comes when they decide deep within their heart that actually I want to be with the devotees. I actually want to wake up early. I actually want to chant Hare Krishna. That's what there's a, and then they become interdependent on their own terms. They come back into the association of devotees, wherever that may be, and they have a determination which is unbreakable. It's very mature. So there is no substitute for maturity, and maturity is a process everyone goes through, just like, you know, children growing up, when they go through all kinds of life experiences. You know, they may be naive, and then they get cheated, and then they have a sort of reference point of what it's like to be cheated, and they're careful the next time. Or many other kinds of experiences that one accumulates as one's socializing and growing up in the world. So it's the same in Krishna consciousness. And hopefully, as one is going through that process, one has good association and guidance, because that can very much help the process. And especially if one also avoids Vaishnava Paradha. If we offend Vaishnavas in the process of our rejecting the process, then it becomes more difficult later on to come back, because it's those are there are repercussions for that. Anything? Did they answer the question? To some degree. Okay. Okay, so the verse is from the Bhagavad Gita. It's the 13th chapter, and Krishna's talking about nature, the enjoyer, and consciousness. And so nature we understand to be the field. The body is made up of these five gross elements and subtle elements as well. But that's not us. That's the field. And we're the knower of the field, the kshetrajna. So beyond that, there is the super knower in all bodies. And now, in this verse, Krishna is telling the process of knowledge, how to actually become the real knower of the person who knows the field and who also understands the super knower in all fields. And we've discussed the process of accepting spiritual master, because that came up early in the first paragraph. And we discussed humility and how that's the first, that's first on the list of attaining knowledge, actual knowledge. But out of the 20, do you remember from the purport, there are 20 items listed, and there's one out of the 20 that is of paramount importance. Without it, the other 19 are not significant. And what was that one? Humility, that's not it. Huh? Unalloyed devotional service. So that's unalloyed devotional service to me, Krishna says. So that's the culmination, that's the perfection. If one has that, even if you have all bad qualities, this is Prabhupada saying early on, and he cites the Bhagavatam, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarvargunas tatra samasate sura. Sura means demigods, those who are full of light. And the qualities that are mentioned by Krishna of the saintly demigod-type living entities are in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, before he talks about the demoniac qualities. And those come naturally to one who's engaged in devotional service. The other good qualities will come. So there's a way in which this movement started by Srila Prabhupada, following the dictum of Rupa Goswami, and that is that somehow or other think of Krishna. He applied that very liberally and very carefully, that many people came to Krishna consciousness without without many samskars or previous experience of doing devotional service, but he was very careful to keep them in touch with Krishna so they'd think of Krishna. And that's yena tena prakarena. That's, first of all, fix the mind on Krishna somehow or other. fix the mind on Krishna. And then from that, all other good things will come. So Prabhupada didn't, as an example, introduce any rules and regulations in the beginning. And he says this in some of his letters when he's writing to people in India, explaining how this whole thing goes, that, you know, he's not giving rules and regulations. He didn't tell people the first thing that they have to follow any rules and regulations. He just taught them how to be near Krishna, specifically through the chanting of Hare Krishna and through hearing Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And then because of that, gradually good qualities came out, and at the proper time, Prabhupada gave more information about rules and regulations in stages. So this goes to the point about maturing also, and you know, the phenomenon of the Hare Krishna movement, how many people came, many people went. Any other thing?
The verse you mentioned in the shloka.
Is it? Oh, yeah, let's see. Thank you. This is on the shloka book on page 395 from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 124. All say, please repeat. Yena tena prakarena.
Yena tena prakarena.
Mana Krishne niveshayet.
Mana Krishne niveshayet.
Sarvi vidhi nishedhasyur.
Sarvi vidhi
nishedhasyur. Etayor eva kinkaraha. One should fix his mind on Krishna by any means. All the rules and prohibitions mentioned in the shastras should be the servants of this principle. Thank you very much. So Friday is our Harinam Sankirtan, right? And it's showing rain. That's always disturbing. I hate that. But that's what happens when you do yajna. We're having a Harinam Sankirtan this Friday, and it'll be in Palo Alto on University and Emerson. There's a little park there. It used to be called Lytton Plaza. I think it still is. And we're going to meet there at what time? 6:59 p.m. for singing publicly the holy names of Krishna, distributing books and prasadam. Will, if weather permitting. So we'll send out an invitation for that tomorrow. Is Damodar here? I thought I saw him walk in. Okay, and then also this weekend we have a guest coming. His Holiness Devamrita Swami will be visiting. He told me when he visited the last time that he wanted to come here to go on Sankirtan. He wanted to. He said for his birthday. I don't know when his birthday is exactly, or his appearance day. He wanted to go on book distribution. So he asked me if he could go out with the devotees here. So he's planning to come here to go on book distribution, and he'll be there for the Harinam Sankirtan if we have it on Friday, and then probably come out on Sankirtan on Saturday. And hopefully not everyone will be gone by then. Nilesh, you're staying. Okay. All right, so that's what's upcoming this weekend. Rakshit Prabhu's going to Kerala on Saturday?
Sunday,
okay. At least you'll be here those 2 days, right? He's gone for 2 weeks. Praveena and Kishore will be leaving on Saturday. Praveena for 2.5 months, and Gaurakrishna, and Kishore for a month. Who else is already gone? Huh? Damodar's leaving. You're leaving too? Unacceptable. How long are you going for?
2 weeks.
2 weeks or 3 weeks? 2.5. Sounds like a rip-off to me, huh? Hariharan? Now what are we going to do? All right, so... Who? Damodar Vamsi Hari is leaving. Shri Krishna Purushottam is leaving this Saturday also. He's going to marry, he's bringing an extra person back. So that's okay. As long as you bring someone back with you, it's okay to go. Yeah. Anyway, have a wonderful trip. Everyone is leaving. And if also, I noticed Srivas Pandit. I guess my mind couldn't even come to think of it. He's leaving to go on Yatra for a month, right? In Mayapur for 3 weeks. When will you be back?
January
2nd. We're going to do our planning for the year like we usually do on January 1st. Neelam, Neelesh and I will do it all and let you know how it turns out. No, we'll wait. We'll wait till everyone comes back and then we'll have a planning session together. Maybe the second weekend in January. Praveena said she'll Skype in to make sure. And she's already made a tentative chart for all the Sankirtan days coming up in 2011 so that we can look at that and have some reference point to it. Hare Krishna. Rakshit's going to Kerala, you know. You have you're going to Kerala also?
Yes.
Okay. This is an experiment to see what happens when nobody's at ISP. But, so I was going to say that Damodar had, I saw that he wrote out all his services and was trying to cover them before he left. And there were a long list of things that he does. So, I mean, this is an obvious point, but if you haven't thought of it yet, I'd appreciate it. If there are services that you do that you can cover, you can call Neelesh. He'll be here. Now, just let us know when you're leaving and what you're leaving behind, just in case there is anything any service that you're leaving behind. Hare Krishna. Okay, so Harinam this Saturday at 6:59. Devamrita Swami will be here Saturday morning for the Bhagavatam class, probably also on Sunday for the Sunday program. And there'll be, we're leading up to the Gita Jayanti, so there'll be a massive distribution of Bhagavad Gitas from now all the way until the end of December, maybe the first few days of January. Okay? Harinam Friday at 6:59. You coming? Well, thanks for stopping by. Good to see you, Jayananda. Hare Krishna. So let's put away all the Bhagavad Gitas and the other books carefully, and then we'll have Artik. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Gaur Premanande Haribo.